You Keegan's was my favorite down in Martin City. Golden Ox for steaks at Kansas City. Doesn't take much to throw me off to balance. Back after this, we're live at Gulfstream. Bruce Lunsford was live at Gulfstream with Art Collector. He joins us next.
It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, LeaderShield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing.
Shaking
this is At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Lunsford and Bill Mott and Junior Alvarado and Art Collector, they were where they wanted to be here at Gulfstream on Saturday afternoon, the 13th race, and $3 billion purse on the line, and the veteran Art Collector with another sparkling performance, and he certainly picks his spots, Bruce. Maybe the key is seven-figure purses.
Well, I'd like to think that's true, but I just can't quite believe he's got a calculator in his head.
Well, how quickly did they call you from Charlestown Saturday night?
Well, you know, Charlestown's got a soft spot in our heart, you know. So he hangs together. We got to do that, right? I mean, that's kind of one of those things. But we'll see. I mean, we've got a long year ahead of us, but I think one that'll be, we'll be patient. We don't have to be in a hurry, and I like our spot now.
Talk about, you know, really the last, pretty much the calendar year of 22, because coming out of the Breeders' Cup after, you know, after the Charlestown Classic in 21 and the Woodward win, he gets that, you know, the big grade one at the time that was so important. The Breeders' Cup Classic you know, didn't really go the way you wanted, but it wasn't going to go to anybody that wasn't named Nick's Go. So what did you learn from last year, and you know, how does it all kind of figure into the way you approach this?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that you get, I've been in the business a long time. He's had little things, but not big things. He's had a temperamental foot that's been a problem, and you know, you patch it and this and that, but whenever it flares up, it usually has a way of impacting his race, and you got to give him time off and all that. So after the Charlestown, and you know, the real big disappointment was that he didn't run his race at Churchill. And we knew, well, here it goes again. And we decided to just back up and see what happens. You know, we really didn't point to anything particularly. And I give Bill all the credit for this. He worked on that foot. He got everything done to get it taken care of. And he had enough time to do it. There was no gun to his head. And so we were thinking about the holy thing, running in the Harlan's Holiday or whatever the race is, they named after Harlan's,
right.
Harlan's, whatever the horse is, I forgot now, that's the one that Jack and the boys owned. But we had that race in spot, and we had another race, and we both just decided, let's just rate, because there's nobody, truthfully, Steve, I would allow and have more confidence in, given plenty of time to breed a horse. If you look back at his career and how many horses he's brought into big races at the big time and won or run big, nobody's better than Bill. He's best.
Well, and you mentioned the breeding part of this, and I think it was forgotten, or I didn't hear it, you know, advertised loudly that he's a homebred of yours.
Well, it's got a better history than that. The very first horse I bought with Seth is, you know, Seth had called me and said, you know, I see you're enjoying the game a little bit. Would you consider being a client of Claiborne's? And I said, shit, I guess this is like a dream come true. Yeah, this has been almost 40 years ago. So, I mean, let's keep that in perspective. But and anyway, the first horse we bought was a horse called Bunning.
Right.
And Bunning, she's the grandmother of all this stuff.
I mean, right.
Everything that's happened, you know, Vision and Verse, a couple, three other horses of hers, you know, the one that's her mother, this horse's mother, you know, was fourth in the Breeders' Cup turf, you know, going whatever, you know, it's a $3 million race at the time at Churchill. And then when we retired her, she became this unbelievable broodmare, and you can look at this horse, you can look at Legionnaire, you can look at the one Classic Legacy. All these horses are, now I've given her the ability to be bred, you know, to good horses because I believed in her. And you know, the first pick being, you know, Big Bernardini, who's a tremendous, you know, broodmare sire.
Yeah.
Not knowing he was going to pass away in that, and I really felt that might make her even worth more money down the road, or hit this colt worth more money. But I didn't really concern myself with that. I said, boy, at my age, I'm so happy to have a horse of this caliber. You know, it's fun to go to these big races.
On the topic, and I'll probably have Sid Fernando tomorrow. We'll certainly touch on you know, the way you've built this. And of course, the dam we're talking about is Distorted Legacy, being out of Bunting and Vision and Verse. It's interesting that a family would have so many good first foals, the way he was a first foal, Vision and Verse was a first foal of Bunting. Your advice, fill in those blanks, Bruce. You mentioned Seth Hancock, but talk about who advised you and helped you understand this, because there's certain patterns you can see in your mare selection and your sire selection of, you know, against your mares.
Well, I mean, first of all, let me say this about Seth. Seth did me a huge favor, and he's the only person I've really called and talked to about the race. I mean, we go way back. You know, he's retired to some extent, but I've always got my own personal relationship with him. And he and I see eye to eye, but he doesn't press anything upon me. He has great confidence in Mott. I think he knows I'm going to try to do what's best for the horse. You're not going to see me like I don't understand the whole theory of racing a 3-year old, you know, racing his legs out from under. He's a 2-year old and 3-year old, and then thinking that he's going to last or whatever else, because you got to give up a lot of horses to get there. And horses that stay on the track longer and older and can mature, this horse appears to have gotten over all his little nicks and knacks. And you saw him run a race that showed that the other day. I mean, he was so full of energy at the end, I felt like he could have run another half a mile. But, you know, that wasn't what we want to do. But it just shows that when they feel good and they're treated well, we got a little lady who takes care of him every day, puts the machine on him and all that, because he's a talent. He's special. And now he's beginning to mature. So I think we'll, you know, if we don't have any setback or some injury that pops up, you know, we could get a full year out of him and make it, you know, a lifetime experience.
Well, on that front too, because I mentioned off air, you know, we went into the week sort of thinking or, you know, we knew obviously Cyberknife, it was going to be his last race before moving to Spendthrift. But I had sort of made the assumption too that Art Collector was in the same position. And explain what your thinking was, because, you know, for a farm to get out in front, you know, they have to get out in front of a new stallion potentially, and it would have, you know, if he hadn't run as well as he did, there was a chance that you know would have sent him to start his career. But talk how that decision was being handled.
Well, I think that in general, you know, Bill and I knew we were going to let the horse tell us what to do. And just like the fact that we laid off of him after that bad race at Churchill, you know, you give your horse an ability to talk to you when he runs. And, you know, yeah, obviously if you start him late in the year, it's hard to get a good year out of him. Okay. And we've seen that before. And I really felt or hoped that he would run second or first in a big way. And we could keep him on the track. A little did I think he'd run as big as he ran. I mean, that was a blowout performance. But what you do is you look at it and say race to race. But now, you know, it's a business for high risk people who want to enjoy their life with it. And it's been very good to me. I don't think about too much the selling and all that part, because it's not my full time living. It's really my full time joy.
Nicely framed. And the way in which the other portion of this became apparent, and you actually on the walk, you know, up the track apron to the winner's circle, you actually fleshed this out. The way things evolved, Luis Saez, who has been riding him basically since Bill, you know, since the horse moved to Bill from Tommy Drury, and Saez riding for Peter Miller and Gary Barber with Get Her Number, and the house rider in the Mott barn is Junior, and this might have been a different result, Bruce, with anybody else. I mean, he really suited Art Collector, and the kind of change in approach is a big part of this result, and him essentially, you know, pairing up his best performance.
That's right. And don't discount Tommy Drury either. Tommy is the kind of go-to trainer for me,
sure,
at home, because he's nearby. And he had to deal with all these little nits and knacks. And, you know, I just made the decision that if you want to get to a grade one at that time of year, it's probably better to be in New York. And my relationship with Mott has always been good. And now he's got three horses for me, and they're all pretty decent. So I think I'll probably send more to him, but Tommy's always going to be my hometown trainer. And he and I have a great relationship. I've known him since he started his career, and I think he's going to be one to hear from over the next few years. He's only 50. he's got a chance to be a really, especially with these increased purses in Kentucky. So yeah. I think, I, and Seth Hancock, I can't tell you how important he's been to me. But listen, I had an old adage in this game I never forgot. You know, keep your horses in the worst company you can, and keep your, keep your friends in the best company you can. And I'm very lucky. I got a close relationship with John Sakura and a lot of, and you know, it's very competitive. You know, the horse farm, which is the Breeders' Cup, all the horse farms are trying to get the horses. So they're trying to be in board to take care of their interests, and I don't blame them because that's their livelihood. You know, I'm not in that situation, so I'm kind of free to do what I want to do. And Mott's not the kind of guy who's going to do anything that'll hurt his image or his horses or anything. And he's been rewarded greatly for it, and should be. In my opinion, he's right up there with the old time trainers of 40 years ago. He can do anything. He's the one that personally got involved in his foot and got it solved when he had the time. I just think that's the kind of trainer he is. He's always gone around and felt the feet and the legs of every horse in the morning. And my only request of him was, I said, you know, Bill, I think this horse could be really good, is I would like to see you put him in a stall near you so you can watch him every day in some form or fashion. And he did. And the horse has always been in the stall closest to him with Irma, little caretaker.
Yep.
And it's worked out perfect for me. And Neil's a hell of an exercise.
Oh, absolutely. No, the team, they've all been with him forever. We should also mention Barbara Minchel, right? Because you got horses with Barbara.
And I'm still loyal to her, too. I send horses up to her because I enjoy Tirana. I enjoy going up there. But, you know, it is a 30% or so discount off the, you know, exchange. And also the purses are getting better, but they're not, you know, what America is. And, you know, probably one of the brightest horsemen in the game today is Mark Cassie. He's a businessman. He does a good job. And it's pretty easy to follow his track to go up there. Many years ago, I did.
And Barbara's put you together with a couple of her clients. You're at the Hooley people, right?
Well, no, I've known them for years.
That's okay.
I put them with her.
Oh, there you go. Hooley, okay.
Hudson, Greg Hudson's probably one of my three best friends in the whole world, maybe the best. And we went to the race together the other day, and way after the end of it, his wife, Leslie, who I've known since college, she was crying like a baby. Wow. I mean, it's the kind of personal things you love about the business. And you know, if I go to a big race, they know they go with me if they can. You know, it's they've got kids and grandkids, but we've experienced some unbelievable experiences together. And I really enjoy it. And it's been, you know, at my age, you don't get things to come around the way you want to, you hope to, but I love the fact that Bill and I have reengaged in our relationship. It's been a real blessing to me. And Tina has become good friends with Eleanor. That's what life's all about. And I invested in a little pack that Riley has down in Oaklawn because I want to see him get off to a good start. I think you make friends as long as you pick the right ones.
Well, a lot of big wins. I mean, we should probably include, First Samurai in the discussion and one of our mutual friends, of course, Lansden Robbins. You guys had such a nice run with Samurai and has really had a very productive, solid, stable stud career.
He's been a great blue-collar stallion, and Seth and I talked about it today. Look how late his career. Still got horses coming. Last Samurai, who's an older horse, matured, you know, ran fourth in the race the other day. And I think that if you put your horses in good hands, whether it's trainers or whether it's farms or whatever else the case may be, you're going to get good results. And I've had good luck. You know, the other horse that Frankie Brothers trained, Madcap Escapade, for me.
Sure.
She might have been the best filly I ever saw. And she was the best horse I ever owned until this one.
Well, so many big wins. I mean, dollar wise, this is this is a big number. But how does this one fit in? Because you've had extended success, Bruce.
Well, I, part of it with me is that I try to listen to people And yes, I managed this way. I was a delegator my whole time in my business. So I picked the ones to listen to, and then I try to figure out which one I want to do. And most of the time, I pick one of the people talking to me and say, I like that route better. And in this particular case, I've been that way in the horse business. And look, nobody's going to question if I pick somebody like Seth to give me advice, or if I pick Bill Mott to train, or, you know, maybe Tommy's new because nobody knew of him outside of Kentucky much. And maybe Barbara's different because she'd kind of gone away from her career, but I knew she was a good horsewoman. I don't have to look over my shoulder all the time and wonder whatever. And I think it just makes my life easier. It's not a chore.
Well, so many big wins. There's only one race you didn't win that we would have liked to have seen you win. That was back in 2008.
Well, you know, I would just tell you that there's been several that I wanted to win, okay, that I didn't get, okay. But there's an old adage: good babies don't cry long. And so once you get going, okay, suck it up, move forward. Okay?
I like that. I've never heard that.
Well, it's my friends. Two or three of us have used it for years. So.
I love that. I'm going to co-opt it.
That's okay. We won't do anything to you for it. We'd be happy to let you have it. I've never been a person that really did. I will say this to you. I don't know if you've seen this article, but the one of the articles, and I think Ron Platter may have written it, but I don't remember now. It was the Daily Racing Form article. Barbara Livingston took a picture of the down the stretch where he's by himself and there's this big cloud with, you know, kind of partying above the grandstand. It's a spectacular picture, okay, to me, because I also, there's a reason he's named Art Collector. And I'm looking at it, I'm going, wow, that may be an unbelievable picture. So I was chasing Barbara down yesterday, you know, my assistant, Mary's with me for 30 some odd years. And I think she's already found her and she's going to get a quote to get it. And, you know, I have a lot of that kind of stuff. Like the race that I saw that got me in the business was when Aladar ran against Abe's Hope in the Bluegrass Stakes. And Aladar Grostark on a one leg, you know, almost still won it, right? Because he pulled it in the top of the stretch. And it was an unbelievable run. The place was packed. And I said, I love this game, right? Hmm. And that's kind of what got me started. So I went back and found the photo, which is hard to do when you're looking back 30 years.
Yeah.
I found the photo from the trainer's widow, and she sent it to me. And I had a painting done of it, a small painting of that race. And I keep it on my wall all the time. So I like that kind of to deal with the stuff that's been good to you.
You know, you also are sort of hinting, and we touched on some of the ownership partnership and crossover tie-ins. And I sort of started the whole show this morning. I didn't plan it, but ended up talking about the Pegasus Day and you know, the way in which the industry, tries to merchandise the game. And, you know, that, I mean, owners and horse players, Bruce, are what we need the most of. And I'm curious, you know, you've actually touched on some of those things inadvertently, you know, just in the course of the conversation. But, you know, as a guy that, you know, was willing to offer solutions as a public servant, what solutions are out there, do you think, that we're not getting to as an industry?
Well, I think to some extent we've made our stage smaller. We've made it smaller by what we talked about earlier, dropping horses off the racetrack. You know, I mean, let's face it, except for the money, which is out of line. It's out of line for what you get. But except for the money, there's nobody has the kind of fun watching their horses breed that they have watching them win. And we're not giving them the experience long enough. I mean, look at Billy took Cigar through 16 straight wins. Everybody knew who Cigar's name was. He has a mile named after him. That's the stuff we're missing. And I know all the guys real well that with Flightline, and I like them all. But he ran six times. And he won two non-stakes races, then he ran four stakes races. And no question that the one or two performances were storyline material. But do they compare with Forgo carrying 136 or 38 pounds, or Man of War, or Secretariat, with all the wins they won and ran on turf, dirt, and everything else? They don't compare to them. On a short-term basis, we don't know enough about it yet. And I just think longevity is as important as ability, and we're missing that.
That's a fair point. And you know, one of the loudest frustration points that you hear, one of the biggest refrains, is that topic. You know, horses leaving the stage too early and not staying around to build, ongoing fan associations. And so one of the side benefits, I said this to Seth Merrow on Sunday on Capital OTB, he had me on to recap the day. I said, one of the real benefits here is Art Collector, you know, people watched and if they weren't fans before, they're going to get a chance to follow him, the rest of this year. So that you're doing your part.
That's right. And because to me, look, nobody quits when they win a Super Bowl when they're 26 years old, right? I mean, nobody does. I mean, that's just not the way life is made up. And we're giving away a lot of our marketing ability by getting these horses off the track. And I know it's important, and I know the money's tough in the game and all that. And I support all that with everybody that does it. But every now and then, just to take a deep breath and say, wow, I love, like the filly, the good filly Zenyatta. Look how they handled her. They made her a hero on the West Coast. I just think you got to do stuff like that if you want the business to go well. And since they're all privately owned, it's hard to get everybody to get in step.
Well, then you professional rivalries and business interests that are at cross purposes, and it's as complex a industry as there is, Bruce. I mean, right? There's nothing quite like it.
That's right, and the key to it is that it's kind of magical, and as I say, his name's Art Collector. That's only appropriate. It's an artistic sport. Look at the pictures and the videos and that are all over the world of horses. I mean, they've always been around.
No doubt. Well, you've been around as long as I've been doing this, and it's always a delight to be able to call you and congratulate you on this kind of a success. And you know, one of the people that is upbeat and smiling, win or lose. So, Bruce, well done. Congrats to everybody involved, and it'll be fun to have him around this whole season.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's right. I'm looking forward to it. And he's in a great barn, you know, with a great trainer and a great caretaker. The whole thing is just fun.
Bruce Lunsford, everybody. And Bruce, I know you do have a Twitter account, but you're not much of a Twitterer.
No, there's too much. The thing about social, I mean, I'll read the things somebody send me about my horses or that. But, you know, if there's a lot about the social networking is not where I want to be, because there's not everybody does it like you do, that are all about good things. There's too much stuff you got to look at it on that either is depressing or makes me feel like people are taking advantage of it, you know. So,
well, I found the picture you're referring to that Barbara took. I'll send that so everybody can see it. And I think I saw it Saturday night, but I went back and found it. You do have a nice distinction though on the account that was opened back in 2008 for, you know, for your campaign. I think you're the only buddy, the only person that I see on Twitter that followed by Barack Obama, which the president followed you. That's pretty cool, actually.
He may not have the ability anymore because he's busy. Okay. He's now a businessman. He's out trying to make money. So.
Okay. I love it. Wow. Bruce, thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you this down the road, obviously, probably Kentucky in April.
Okay. That sounds great. You take care, Steve.
I appreciate it.
Okay.
Bruce Lunsford, everybody, who is really the kind of owner in the game that win or lose doesn't, you know, I've never seen him, you know, complain, no grousing, none of that. We've got Phil D'Amato ahead of a visit from Andy. So let me get to Phil and not waste any time tap dancing, because I can tell already the day is going to, it's unbelievable. I mean, we've had two conversations and we're going to end up tight on the morning. And Phil D'Amato is going to join us, and we'll start talking to Phil about a dirt stake winner. Are we sure it's you? Is that the right barn? Do I have the right number?
Yeah, no, it finally happened. No, in all seriousness, he's a horse. We bought him privately, or I should say, we bought him out of one of their digital sales, and it's just been a nice addition to the barn, and found a really nice spot. Got a great trip and perfect ride by Juan Hernandez.
We're talking about Newgrange, and you know, the opportunity to kind of just go on with a a ready-made horse. What did you learn? How quickly do you seize on what you've got when you bring a horse in like this?
This horse was just kind of trial and error. Originally they bought him and they thought he was going to like the grass, and we trained him. We were able to breeze him on the grass at Del Mar, and he really didn't handle it well. So we went back to the well and put him on the dirt, and he ran an okay race first time out for us at Del Mar and the shared belief, but we didn't have him fully cranked. He hadn't run in a long time. And then he had a very impressive allowance win at Santa Anita. And we ran him back in the stake at Del Mar, and he just kind of didn't get the greatest trip. We were, stuck up there on the inside and not doing what this horse likes to do. He's kind of more of a free-running horse. We're able to pick up Juan, and he got him in the clear and dead fit. And then this horse shows that, you know, he can fit, you know, with these kind of horses when he's ready to go. And I thought won pretty nicely there late.
Well, and of course, it had been last seen out of the Baffert barn, and part of the SF bloodstock team, the Avenger type, stallion program thought. Violence out of the Empire Maker Bella Chianti. These four races, I mean, he clearly has got plenty of mileage, right? I mean, there's a lot of tread on these tires. Made four starts at 2 and 3. So winning the San Pascal, really the only thing you can think about is a big cap run.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely in play. I know the owners were talking about possibly, one of the Dubai races as well, maybe the Mile, maybe the Classic. But he is undefeated here at Santa Anita. He shows an affinity for this track. And we're just going to kind of play it by ear. But he just turned four. So, again, like you said, he should have plenty of, life left in those legs to have a nice, campaign for a nice year or two, and have some fun with, and hopefully win more graded stakes.
Well, and you know, the unique opportunity here was to buy out of the Horse of Racing Age sale, and $325,000. Rockingham signed the ticket, but David Burnson and Little Red Feather all came in together, and that's a fun group. Yeah,
great people. Have a couple horses for them in partnership. Kim Lloyd found the horse, and give all credit to him. He thought he was kind of a diamond in the rough, and not one of Bob's top ones, but maybe in a different environment, he could shine, and you know, we didn't have to run against Defunded and Bob's yeah. other top ones the other day, but he, you know, he showed he can fit against, you know, Graded Stakes Company in the right spots and do it well.
Well, that actually leads to an interesting question. Phil, you know, you've obviously, most of our conversations when it comes to recapping stake wins has been about all these nice turf horses. The situation regarding the three-year-olds, and you know, when the horsemen are talking, and you know, we see these fields, you know, particularly on the three-year-old front, no one is going to begrudge the Baffert team, and we all understand, you know, the client base, the elite clients that are, you know, have certain things on their mind when it comes to the three-year-olds. But it what's your view of this? I mean, and where things are? I mean, because here's a horse that, you know, was in fact a hopeful on that kind of a path, and you know, now it looks like he's going to have a nice career at this point. But it's a bad look for the game. I mean, the field that came together for Saturday.
Yeah, you know, it's there's no perfect answer to solve the question. There isn't, and I mean, you can't fault Bob for creating a great system, you know, with a great clientele, and he's proven effective, you know, to do what he does, and that's what his barn's designed to do. So, I mean, you can't fault him for it. It's just how do you fix the problem to create more horses to run against them? You know, that's the bigger issue, and I don't have a perfect answer for that. You know, it's like use the rest of the guys here. I mean, Sadler has a lot of money to spend at the sales, and I think that's where it emanates, a good portion of it. But, I mean, the rest of us, for every horse we're buying at the sales for $150,000, $200,000, you know, they're buying 10, you know, at a million each. So it's just but they're great at doing it, you know. So it's like I said, I don't know the answer to solve the issue, but you know, hopefully in the years to come we can figure it out and have nice full fields in these derby preps.
Out of curiosity, and you do have a couple of dirt runners, dirt maidens coming up later this week, Friday, the which I will ask you about. But do you find that your clients are avoiding that division?
I just think, I mean, I would say that in most trainers, it just comes down to, you know, you can buy a good quality grass horse for $150,000, $200,000, but to buy the real top pedigree dirt horses to compete in these Triple Crown races, you can find them at those prices as well, but... Hmm. You know, when you're spending at least north of a half a million up, your chances of finding those kind of prospects are going to be much greater. And then you multiply that by, you know, 50. It's just you know, a strong kind of, you know, a bunch of horses that you're going to have to run against to kind of compete in those races and work your way to the top. So, like I said, he's deserved everything he's gotten. He's won all how many Kentucky Derbies, Preaknesses, Triple Crowns, and you know, I couldn't fault an owner for giving him those opportunities, and that's what his barn is designed to do, and they do it very well. But you know, there are plenty of other guys that can take these dirt horses and produce results. So, you know, like I said, hopefully the powers that be can figure out a solution here in the years to come.
Well, and let's also note that, you know, that you're in a very impressive heavy hand position when it comes to the turf horses. You're running three in the megahertz on Saturday.
Right, and that's what I said. It's just my owners have kind of their pocketbooks kind of look more towards grass, because grass, you don't have to spend as much money, and you can get, you know, really nice results and make some money. But with the dirt kind of horses, you're going to have to put up more money to have a chance to win. It's just the way it is, you know. But yeah, so we've focused on the grass and we've done very well at it, and hopefully we'll continue to do well at it.
Well, in addition to Newgrange winning the San Pascal earlier on the card in the Las Virgenes, I actually thought that Sweet Trouble had a real interesting look at I knew she was going to be a price, and she ran credibly. What's your thoughts coming out of the Las Virgenes?
Yeah, you know, we just took a swing. I mean, they had a maiden special weight race here coming up this week, and we decided, hey, if we could hit the board in that stake and make her a graded stakes placed, you know, it helps us out then more than making her a maiden winner. And we almost got the job done. But, yeah, I think it's the first time going long against really nice horses. And with that experience under her belt, hopefully that'll improve her a couple of lengths to maybe compete with those horses down the road.
What about distance? Do you think a turn back makes sense?
I still think she can go two turns. Kent thought so too, but maybe she was just kind of a maiden special weight win shy of being able to compete with those, just fitness wise. So I think maybe we'll try two turns again, try to break her maiden, and then, you know, maybe re-engage those fillies down the road.
Let me ask as well about Motorious's effort in the Clocker's Corner Sunday.
Yeah, I think it was a good effort. There wasn't a lot of pace, and it did, I would say, compromise his chances, and kind of was in a good spot and then got shuffled back to the very back there. And by the time they were crossing the dirt to make up that kind of length on those lengths on a really nice horse like Lane's Way was just too much, but he gritted it out for a second and he'll live to fight another day.
I reached out to you, I guess the last week, and we couldn't connect, but let's also, before I touch on a couple of other spots, Amy C's win in the Las Cienegas first weekend of the year.
Nice filly. She loves the hill. We're going to try to get one more prep into her, and then her main goal is going to be the Monrovia, and hopefully try to stay undefeated down the hill. She's been a joy to train thus far, and hopefully we can continue to rack up nice wins with her.
Excellent. And there's actually a bunch of nice-looking maidens that are coming, but let's look ahead. I may have to call you next Monday as well. I mentioned the Megahertz on Saturday, and you send out the Troika of Oakhurst, School Dance, and Hamwood Flyer.
Yeah, all those are really nice prospects. Hamwood Flyer, she likes to go to the lead and not look back. School Dance is kind of more of a stalker, and Oakhurst likes to make one big late run. So kind of have all those scenarios at play, and just going to have to let the pace scenario decide how the race shakes out. But all three of those horses are doing really well.
Well, and, you know, you from the draw standpoint, Hamwood Flyer kind of runs into a bit of a problem, maybe, because Bay Storm, Jonathan Thomas is shipping in from Florida, in fact, with Johnny to ride, and Bay Storm drew the one hole, Hamwood the two, so they're shoulder to shoulder, and you got to think that Johnny goes forward, there's no other real obvious speed. School Dance can stalk, but there's no reason for Ramon Vasquez to do anything other than get in position. It just feels like Bay Storm and Hamwood, is the early part of this race, is going to tell a big story.
Yeah, no doubt. I think that Jonathan Thomas filly looks really nice. She's got a nice proven record. She's got nice tactical speed. She's sat 1-2 in her races. I think Hamwood, California turf speed tends to be a little bit faster. I'm guessing Hamwood's going to be in front of her, and you know, if that filly wants to go with her, then, you know, she's going to have to really run fast early. So, yeah, School Dance will be in a tactical spot. And, again, Oakhurst, we're able to pick up Flavian Pratt, which never hurts. And he's really good coming from behind.
Tell me about the second time North American for Sterling Stables, San Anton, who just missed in the North American debut at the end of last year, gets first Lasix, three-year-old by Fast Company. Who picked this horse out and so forth?
He was Niall Dalton picked him out. One of our crack bloodstock agents, he picked out Going Global for me amongst, oh, yeah, and Raya Moon amongst other grade one winners. And it's a nice horse, useful horse, still trying to figure him out in terms of his best distance. Ran a really nice race for his first time out. Hopefully he can improve second out. I like the post for him. He can save ground. Flavian knows him as well. And hopefully second time in the country is time to get his picture taken.
And since we're touching on Saturday's card, we might as well ask. I don't even have to look at the PPs to know that Nick Alexander is sending out Carmen Miranda in the sixth race. Who's going to wear the basket of fruit on their head in the paddock?
Yeah, she's a nice filly that kind of, I think she's steadily on the improve. She's won two in a row, and Flavian's been breezing her, likes her. It's a filly that I'm hoping after this race we can step up into Calbred Stakes Company. But she's definitely a nice filly, and I think she's definitely getting better.
Speaking of Calbreds, you send out Calbred Maidens on Friday, and among Edessia and Ashley Sandcastle in the third, and Yo Time in the eighth. Who's ready to win?
I would say I would say Ashley Sandcastle drew the rail, which is very hard for a first time starter. She's a big scopey filly, though. She looks more like a two turn filly. Idesia is a little bit smaller and speedier with a much better post, so she gets the advantage there just on the draw and the race shape. And Yo Time is a horse that definitely think will like two turns, and I'm thinking the grass as well. Got this kind of big, you know, flowing action, so I'm hoping the two turns and the turf is enough to get him in the winner's circle.
And a quick survey of some of the late runners from the end of the year and the beginning of the meet. Gregorian Chant and Classical Cat, those types. What's next?
We're going to see. Classical Cat, we got a bunch of options. We could go on. We could give him a little breather here and then have him ready for the second half of the year. Gregorian Chant, probably one of the next stake or allowances down the hill, come with his late run. So those are kind of options I would say we'll look for with those two.
Is Raya Moon turned out?
No, Raya Moon's in the barn. She'll have her first breeze back this coming weekend. We're going to take it slow with her, just kind of give her a little working vacation. I've been doing a lot of jogging with her, kind of put her on the same kind of path I took Going Global on last year after we ran in the American Oaks with her. Just kind of let her catch up and be ready to run against older, later, more middle of the year with her.
Very good. And out of the San Gabriel, the Hollywood Turf Cup winner, Prince Obama.
Yeah, he's going to run this Sunday in the San Marcos.
Okay.
Yeah, he's been getting ready to go, doing very well, and might run a couple other ones in there, but he's doing really well.
And I suppose we should also ask about Balnikov coming out of the Mathis.
Balnikov, we're just slowly building him up. March 4th is going to be his race date. We're going to run him in the, I believe it's the Kilroe, grade one.
Nice.
and just have him fresh and ready to run his best race off the bench.
Excellent. Well, there it is. There's a survey of everything. And there's more. I mean, some of the veterans, are they still around? Hong Kong Harry?
Hong Kong Harry, as of now, similar plan. He's just been steadily breezing, and we're probably going to run him off the bench in the kill row as well. So hopefully it'll be a nice battle royal in there for a nice grade one victory.
There we go. Well, Phil, I appreciate it. Great to get caught up. Great job with Newgrange and everybody else. And obviously, might talk to you as early as Monday.
You got it, Steve, anytime.
Phil D'Amato, everybody. You can follow Phil. Phil D'Amato 1 on Twitter. And wanted to catch up on all that. And there's more. I mean, he's got bunch of interesting horses to keep tabs on. Balnikov that was a lean on opening day that really, you know, right? Wasn't that, I mean, I had a good day opening day, but I who was it that beat him in that? Who beat him in the Mathis? Drawing a blank. Let me draw Andy Serling in, because I cannot believe how fast this morning has gone. But we're going to start to get late here if we don't get moving. So we'll get Andy in. I mentioned Herb Oster is going to stop by from Florida THA. But right now, Andy Serling, good morning.
Morning. How you doing, Steve?
Excellent. Excellent. Coming to you from Gulfstream Park.
Better you than me.
you know Bruce Lunsford a long time, yes?
Sure.
That's what I thought. He was one of those owners that you just, you know, obviously you're happy for any owner. But, you know, here's a guy who was always upbeat, win or lose. The idea that Art Collector is going to be around for the season, that's a positive too. We had a nice I'll tell you one thing, Andy. He was tough to come up with, I thought, on Saturday.
Well, yeah, his recent form had been pretty awful,
right?
A couple of years ago, he would have been maybe the favorite, but based on his form in 2022, it was impossible to like, but. Ran well. It looked like a winner every step of the way, frankly.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I didn't bet the race. I had no opinion and really didn't even look at the race hardly, but based on his recent form, he was very tough to like. I agree. But clearly they made the right move. They were originally going to come to Cigar, I think. And then last I read, they were going to come to Cigar. Then theoretically, it was going to be his last career start. But then they shipped to Florida, so I assume they were preparing for this race. And I think if he hadn't run well, they probably would have gone to Claymore. But instead, they're going to stay racing this year. And I hope he continues to run like that. He ran terrific.
You know, as much as that race, you know, is the feature of the day, it was the turf racing that, you know, that really was the centerpiece. And I mean, Arad Ortiz just puts on a show, Andy.
I really didn't watch. I mean, I watched watched one of the races, the Pegasus Turf. I watched
Atone.
Yeah, I don't think I watched the other races. I don't remember anybody winning. Yeah, I saw Atone. I was glad he won for Kirk. I'm friendly with Kirk. I thought about betting him, but 7-2 seemed like a massive underlay. Apparently, I was one of many, many people that liked it. So somebody told me that earlier. I was talking about the race, and I said I was interested in him. And I told Kirk I was interested in betting him. And somebody said, "Everybody don't like that horse." So
exactly.
I really wasn't even paying attention. I was actually on the phone while the race was being run, and then I realized, "Oh, yeah, there he is." But I mean, that's always been a race that sort of probably shouldn't be a Grade One. There's a number of those. Unfortunately, though, the Woodward, which Art Collector won a couple years ago, has been downgraded. So that's good. But the Gulfstream Park Turf remains a great one. But I think it was probably a fun race. I just didn't really have the interest in looking at it.
Well, I just was struck, you know, with Ortiz's. I mean, his timing is just impeccable on You know, Ivar and Castellano looked like they had, you know, struck the front at the right time, and then, you know, Arad sweeps on by. He did the same thing with Red Knight in the McKnight earlier on the card. Same kind of, you know, from a difficult post, from the, you know, the 11 hole. So he, there was also, well, there's no reason to dwell on some of those results if you weren't involved.
Well, you can hear your soliloquy. I'm fine. I just got off. I had a large juice. I'm fine.
Nice. All right. There was a horse that jumped up for Pletcher and Viola Rapoli earlier in an allowance race, first time turf, 12-1, and I don't know. I mean, that was also Irad, and
it was an impossible horse to have.
Sometimes you just sit there and
it's one of the reasons I don't bet down there.
Yeah. Well, on the New York front,
I've had a lot of results there, impossible as well.
and some that were not impossible, but were sort of eye popping. That toboggan win.
Fares like Jamie Nestor are a problem. I mean, I understand why bettors are infuriated when a horse like that, a 5-year-old, runs a race that's, you know, I don't know, a good 6 lengths better than he's ever run. Yep. His best races from a trainer that was suspended for 6 months, that had appealed a suspension he would otherwise be serving. He's was at times when 30-40%. You know, you've seen routinely horses he's claimed or taken over improving dramatically. And we saw this a lot with Jason Service, to be honest. And this is somebody who's had medication violations. So where there's smoke, there's fire. People see that. So I do understand why bettors are infuriated by that. It's just, you know, where does it come from? When you see it, all too often when those performances happen, they're from trainers who people have, you know, whether right or wrong, fair or not, there are suspicions about them. And it's not like the Ness suspicions don't come with some proof behind them, given his violation history. So it's not a good look. It's not a good look for the game.
No.
You know, I don't get triggered the way other people do about Bob Baffert, because I don't think Bob Baffert's a cheat. I think Bob Baffert's done some things that he, you know, should have kept a tighter ship. But I don't, you know, I find the triggering of my people on him by amusing, actually, on Twitter is just amazing. You know, and all this hand-wringing about his horses, I feel as though Bob has not always been a great ambassador for the game. But I think Bob has run great horses, and he's a great trainer. I don't see that there's comparisons between these two at all. Others do, but they don't have the smoke to back it up. Bob's violations have not been the same. But I do understand why in situations like that with Jamie Ness, people do get upset, because there's stuff behind it. And I'm sorry, but you do see these huge improvements.
Yeah,
we've all seen
them. Yep. Well, this was a 111.
Yeah, and it's flippable. I mean, a 5-year-old to have improved like that is a horse that's been pretty consistent throughout his career.
I, you know, on a different topic, because I asked Shug today and Phil D'Amato, who of course it's right in his backyard. What do you think people should think how they should react to this circumstance that has, you know, 4 Baffert trainees in, you know, making up the field in that Lewis on Saturday?
I don't know. Should they? Maybe they should. I think they should take the streets, Steve. I'm thinking of organizing on the Upper West Side. Maybe I could get Linda Rosenthal, the woman who's got the assembly room, the thing on my block. Maybe I could stop by there. He has a deep interest in horse racing, so I've heard. I don't know. What should they think? I don't know. Bob has a lot of. I mean, I understand why trainers out there are frustrated. I do. I don't know what to say. He certainly seems to have an insane percentage of the good horses, but he is running 4 of them. I don't know. I don't. Once again, I'm not as caught up in that stuff. They probably have the best 2- or 3-year-old prep Derby weekend. This was weekend, right? I mean, the Holy Bull is a disaster. It doesn't look like the winners is going to be a particularly good race, and I'm being kind about that. I mean, as this morning, they're talking about as many as 3 to 5, and, you know, I mean, I think there's probably at least one better than anybody, save perhaps Dale's horse, if he can run back to his last race in the race. I mean, the good race on the card probably at Gulfstream is the 2 Pleasures and the Allowance earlier in the day. Obviously, Todd didn't want to run the stake, or they wouldn't have carved that allowance, but whatever. They're probably more talented, probably a more competitive race, and hand-wringing about whether they're not going to get points. Okay, well, they probably will eventually when they switch barns. And if they're good enough for the Derby, they'll find their way in, whether or not they got points or not, and whatever the race is this weekend. I don't know. You know, I understand why people, if I was a trainer in California, it'd be frustrating getting horses, and people give all the horses to Bob, but I don't think that Bob should have to apologize for that, should he?
No, and Phil said the same thing. And but you know, one of the interesting sort of adjuncts.
Nor should owners, by the way. Owners have a right to do their horse wherever they want. They spend the money.
Completely agree. One thing I asked Phil, which I thought it occurred to me as he was talking, to say to him, "Do your owners are they steering clear of that division?" And he said, "Absolutely, they are." He said, "For starters, they don't have to spend as much money on turf horses. They can budget $100,000 and $150,000 and get a nice turf horse, and that's what he's training." And he's, you know, he's referred to frequently as the West Coast Chad Brown. I mean, he's got three horses running in the megahertz on Saturday, and that's not unusual for him. So there's some cause and effect going on here.
So in other words, let me get this straight. According to what you're saying, one of the reasons that Bob is running all four of them is that other owners don't want to run in those races against him. Well, if that's the case, then I'd love to know how that's Bob's fault. If that's also the case, I'm not asking you. I'm not saying you're blaming anybody. I'm just bringing up the point that you made that I have no idea whether it's true or not. If that's all the case, where are they running? They're not in the Holy Bowl. They're not in the Withers. Maybe are they at Tampa? Is Tampa up to Sam Davis this week or next week?
Next week.
Next week. Good. Where are they, these 3-year-olds? You know, didn't Bob run 3 of 5 in the Futurity at LaSalle and lose?
Yes.
Okay. Right. Okay. So it's possible. You know, I know that it's also, you know, that you see a lot of hand-wringing by people when Chad Brown runs 3, you know, and then somebody who's the only one of the few that has the nerve to run against him actually beats him. Doesn't guarantee a victory, running these horses. I'm not saying you're doing it, but I don't understand the criticisms of Baffert, who's running 4 in the race. It's not like he's not doing his part. Now, I guess you could say, well, he gets all the horses. Well, apparently he does, or apparently he doesn't, because according to you, what you've told me is people aren't going to run against him. Well, I know there was a 5-horse field, and he had 3 of them, and he lost. So, believe it or not, it's possible to beat him. I know he wins 100%, but if guys don't run against him, then they can't beat him. And it's the same thing used to happen here with Chad Brown. If you don't run against the guy, you can't beat him. I mean, I just, where is the problem? I'm not sure. I'm not sure I know where the problem is, but I don't get all bent out of shape about the whole thing. Nor am I. I mean, I understand the Churchill have a right to have made the decision they made with Bob, and, you know, I'm not going to get involved in that. I don't understand why he's still dragging it out, but, you know, he's not going to be in the Derby, and they're going to have to switch barns to run those races. And listen, you know, there are a lot of things he probably could have done a few years ago that would have avoided this after those positives with Gamine in 21, right? Or 20, whatever it was. Who can remember these days what's what? But nonetheless, those horses will end up in the Derby under a different trainer's name, and the horses that belong in there, and they may or may not win.
No, I get it, and you know, the 4 that are matching up are, it's fine. Baffert himself, in fact, Mike Welch yesterday, he had talked to Baffert for one of the advance pieces that he was writing, and asked the question. He said, "Where I have no idea where everybody else's 3-year-olds are," and that, I mean, there's got to be other open company three-year-olds.
There have to be other three-year-olds.
Exactly.
And, I mean, the whole point of these races is that they're preps. Find out where your horses land. It's, you know, it's better in many cases to run and lose than not run at all, because you find out I'm not good enough to run against those horses, or maybe I'm close enough that with a little improvement I can get there. But to not run because Baffert's got all these horses, it's now, like I said, I don't. Now, on the other hand, there were 16 nominated. I think the 14 were Bobs. Now, did people not even nominate because they didn't want to run against them? I don't know. I don't know their horse population. I don't know anything about what's going on out there. It is, though, pretty incredible that Bob would have 14 horses he could nominate to it. But once again, he's in business to train horses and win races.
Yeah, exactly.
Not like he put a sign up that said, I'll only take a few, give the rest to other people.
Nope, nobody does that. Andy, a couple of minutes looking ahead and $28,000 carryover on Thursday.
You excited?
I got the PPs. I haven't done any work yet, but
you can take them to the beach.
I will take them to the beach. Actually,
you got a big beach day ahead of you.
I do have a big beach day ahead of me.
Do you have a sun hat?
I got my Lady Spite Spear hat from the Pegasus Turf. That
good spot for her. You know, she wouldn't have wanted to run her in the filly race. Should have lost there too, but one fluky race at Keeneland, and suddenly she was the best turf horse in the country.
She ran an incredible race.
Where'd she finish?
Fourth.
Oh, she did?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. I stand corrected. She ran fine.
Yeah, no, she ran good. She ran tough. She hung in as best she could. She got beat. She got beat 2.5 lengths.
Okay, you talking about this race.
Yeah, go ahead. Give a quick. Quick thoughts on that Thursday card before I let you go.
I like. It's not a particularly good card. I thought the favorite Reed Kahn was tough in the third race, first layout. The Magnificent Chrome would run okay. Second off a layoff. See if he can still run.
6-3.
Let's see. What's the fourth race?
That's that maiden 40 going a mile.
Oh, that's quite a race. Smoke and Heat will be about 2-5. He looks like a single to me.
Oh, there you go.
There you go. Crush him at 2-5. Let's see. I think I picked Justin Nyquist in the fourth, but I can't remember for sure. And I really don't feel like looking at my paper. My picks will be up at some point, but I think the worst of the rail I picked will probably be one of the favorites.
Justin Nyquist.
Not a very compelling race. The sixth race.
Starter Allowance going 7.
I like Big Balance, Venezuela, and Drink the Wind. I think I picked Drink the Wind, but I'm not sure. I picked one of those two.
So four, 7.
Excuse me, I cough up a lung. I think Unbridled Bomber will be tough in the next race.
That's a decent third level allowance.
It is. I think Kinetic Sky will run okay for Linda, too. That's an open race. That race is a little more competitive. I think No Burn has a chance. I really like War Stopper, but he can win. In the last race, now that's the one you've been waiting for. I don't remember who I picked or if I've even made official picks yet, but I thought the 2 Pedal Lane, the 4 Busted Hot, were the two I was sort of the most interested in. I think a lot of people will want Fancy Aztec on the outside. That horse can win, but that horse was on a gold rail last time, so I'm not inclined to get excited about that horse, but that horse can win.
Excellent. All right, so it's an approachable sequence for those that want to get involved for the $1 pick 6 carryover Thursday, and we'll wait for tomorrow for the draw. We got the Withers and the Busanda on Saturday.
You gonna come up for them?
No, I will be here for the Holy Bull and the other three-year-old action here before shifting gears over to Tampa for Sam Davis Day.
Oh, George Santos is trending on Twitter. What do you think it's about? Sorry, I shouldn't have asked.
I think he's singing the national anthem at the Super Bowl.
He already has.
Well, you know, he's responsible for Prince's career, if you didn't know.
Well, he is going to be going on the volleyball tour. He's a great sport of history in college. He's a volleyball player. How of all the things to lie about, how do you pick that one? You should have gone for something like.
Well, isn't that the key to a good con? Is that those little details?
It didn't turn out to be a particularly good con.
No, it hasn't.
Well, he conned him enough. He got him off.
Oh, my God.
I disagree.
Too funny. Andy, I appreciate it.
It meant a lot more to me than it did to you.
Andy Serling, everybody. Back in action at Aqueduct on Thursday. Thank you, Ant. Unbelievable. He's the greatest. Herb, come over here. Where's Herbie Oster? Here we go. All right. Okay, we got a live human being to join us here, the last portion of the show. I knew this was going to be when I said to Andy, I sent him a text. I said, I'm here. No, we're live. There are no commercials. This is, hold on, turn that around. There you go. And you got to turn that little head tchotchke. This goes, there you go. You're in business. Let me fix that for you.
Got it.
All right. It's a little loose, that thing. It's okay. Well, we don't want to mess anybody's hair.
I got a big head. It's okay.
Herb Oster joins us, and what a pleasure!
It's fun. This will be fun.
We met yesterday, and I'd seen your name and the Florida THA, the Horsemen's Organization. They're sponsoring the week long Groom Elite program. We'll talk about that in a minute. For you, Herb, you're a New Yorker. How long you been down here?
I've been down here full-time 10 years. I lived on Long Island, my first marriage, and moved down here in 8 years I've been down here.
Yes.
I live in Aventura, and my wife is Latin, and her whole family lives here. And they always said to me, what is a gringo doing in Aventura? You know, because I consider this North South America. You know,
you're not wrong. With your horse involvement back in New York.
Yes, I was on the NYTHA board for 6 years.
With Rick Violette.
With Rick Violette.
Rest in peace.
That was a great loss. And in fact, his sister was at the races on Saturday.
Nice.
I sat with her a little bit. And then I came down here and Joe Asino, who was my trainer, said, why don't you run for the board? I said, okay, and I ran for the board, and he called me up. He said, we have the election results, have good news and bad news. So what's that? He said, you won, I lost.
Yep.
But he proceeded to get on the board, and now he's our president of the FTHA. So my passion has always been the backstretch. I was on the board of the Belmont Child Care Association for many years, which was a fantastic charity. Because you can see the results of your work.
Sure.
So you see these little kids grow and then graduate into regular school. It's just fantastic. But I couldn't do it because of the distance. So now I'm doing some benevolence work here for the FTHA.
Really nice. Really nice. In the Northeast, though, was Joe was training for you?
No, I had Dominic Galluccio for me.
Oh, my God. How long were you with Dominic?
Oh, forever.
Oh, my God.
Forever. He was my only trainer, you know, and it was a great loss. A great loss because he was a great friend as well, you know.
I mean, as horrible circumstances.
It was terrible.
Just unbelievable.
I mean, he went in about a week, you know. It was unreal. 55 years old. Not supposed to happen.
Well, and a guy so full of life. I always quote that line that T.J. Kelly told us, you know, when you pick a trainer, you're buying a friend. And Dominic and his whole circle, I mean, with Siaka and Gullo and right. Levine and Barbera.
Right. And Steve DeMauro was involved.
There's that whole, you know, 50 to 60 year old group that grew up on the racetrack
right.
together that are the heart and soul, really, sure. in a lot of ways
and
in New York.
Who can't forget his jackets at Saratoga?
The greatest. Huh? Just the greatest. The absolute
Anyhow,
greatest.
Then when I came down here, I hooked up with Joe Asino.
Nice.
We lived in the same building.
Yeah.
He since has moved. But had some good horses with him over the years.
Yeah, do you operate on your own, or do you have?
I always had a partnership. Yeah. It was called Team Five Star Stables.
Okay.
We had a core of three or four guys, yeah. And then we would add a couple. It just got unwieldy, and I decided I don't need it anymore, you know. So,
what business were you in?
I was in the insurance business. I still am.
Okay.
So you life and health insurance.
Very nice.
Investments, yeah.
Excellent.
Anyhow, down here we do – our goal is – our motto is horsemen helping horsemen.
Yeah.
Our goal is to do as much as we can for the backstretch as we possibly can. And we have a lot of great programs for them. We started a lunch voucher program for the grooms that ship in from Palmetto's, now Palm Beach Downs,
sure.
Payson Park. And we give them a voucher for lunch. So they come in, they go into the receiving barn, they get a voucher, they go to the kitchen, they can have lunch on the association. And that's a great program. It's working out. I just have some statistics. And last year we served over 20,000 lunches.
How about that?
Yeah, and on to the backstretch. And we have a dental assistance program. We send out people to local dentists. We have two down here. We have one up in Palmetto's. We have an eyeglass service. We send them for eyeglasses and eye exams. We also have a college scholarship program. And last year we gave out, I think, about 12 scholarships, totaling a little over $40,000 to four-year schools and two-year schools.
Excellent.
We've had some of our kids graduate, and that's a really great program also.
Well, and we don't really think of this, but the fact now that Gulfstream is the year-round venue probably provides some stability and continuity for that portion of the community.
Right. Well, we have dormitories here, as you know.
Yeah, nice dormitories.
And most of them live on the dorms. And up in Palmetto's, they just built two new dorms, beautiful dormitories up there. And we just look to help them however we can. You know, we have we work in partnership with our chaplain, Tom LaPointe, Father Tom, who is an unbelievable individual.
RTCA.
Yeah, and he has an assistant, Alberto, here, and an assistant up in Palmetto's, Guillermo.
Nice.
And we have a food bank every Friday. About 11 o'clock, people come, and he gets so much food, it's unreal how much food he gets. From Whole Foods, from 7-Eleven, from the food banks, and we distribute it on Fridays. People go home with shopping bags full of food. They don't have to go to Publix, believe me.
That's
they could shop at his trailer, you know. We do barbecues. We have Christmas parties, Thanksgiving parties, and
children's programs.
Well, I've been on the back burner has been a child care center here.
Nice.
And it's a little bit hard to get off the ground, but I know they're working on it at Santa Anita. They're trying to do it at Santa Anita, and we might be able to use their model here.
Well, you've got the Anna House. You've got Michael right. Dubb.
Michael Dubb's is a good friend.
Lean on Michael.
Great guy.
and you got an insurance counterpart, Mike Caruso.
Mike Caruso is a great guy also. I know them all very well, you know.
Yeah.
I bought a condo in Westbury that Mike built. It's called Meadowbrook Point. It was on the grounds of the old Roseau Raceway.
How about that?
Yeah. And when he had to go to the zoning board, he said to me, "You're coming with me to the zoning board." I said, "What am I going to say?" He said, "Don't worry about it. You'll say something." So I got up before the zoning board, and they said, "Why do you want this project to be built?" I said, "Well, I live in Westbury. I want to downsize into a condo. And, you know, when I was a young man, I used to go to Roosevelt all the time. I lost a lot of money, and I'm trying to get it back through the condo." Anyhow, they okayed the project, and I think 720 units went up.
Oh,
yeah, so he's a great guy. good friends.
Too funny. This program, and we'll talk about Reed McClellan's groom elite, okay. And how often do you run this? Okay.
Well, we used to do it every year when we stopped for the pandemic.
Yeah.
And we took it up again this year. So it's a 6-week course where we're trying to take hot walkers and make them into grooms or grooms and improve their skills. So we meet every Monday and Tuesday, and we serve them lunch, and then Reed goes through his class, does his class. We do practice. Yesterday we took them to the pony barn, and we showed them how to tack, the proper way to tack horses. The week before we did bandaging. Not we, he. I just watched. And they're getting a lot out of it, and I'm very impressed with how into it they are. They really want to help. They want to improve themselves and help themselves and perhaps move up to the next rung in the backstretch.
Well, and this is an invaluable resource. Reed McClellan has been doing this. I've had him on several times, but yeah. He's been doing it forever. And also has got assistance to trainer hopefuls to pass the trainer exams.
Right.
It's an invaluable resource. Right. Doesn't get enough credit actually. And this is a THA and
Gulfstream Park.
And Gulfstream.
We're sharing the cost of this program.
Excellent. Yeah,
our students pay nothing, just to devote their time.
It's a 40-hour program.
It's today and the next week, Monday and Tuesday, and then the following week is evaluation, Monday and Tuesday, and then on Wednesday we have a graduation luncheon up in Ten Palms.
Nice.
To them, and they get their certificates, and he has a beautiful jacket that he gives them, and it's a cool program.
I told everybody earlier that you were going to be on. Herb Oster is joining us from the Florida THA, the Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association, and talking about Groom Elite. We've got about, nine
kids in the class. Yeah.
That have been hot walking. I mean, explain the financial benefit and the impact on a life to go from hot walking, basically a per horse stipend versus being a salaried hourly employee.
Right. Well, that's what we
as
hope.
A groom.
That's what we hope will happen. We hope that they can graduate to a groom and their weekly salary will go up equally as high, and they would just add to their income and their economic benefit.
Absolutely. And with Reed, I mentioned to everybody this morning that you were joining us and we were going to talk about it. And I extended sympathies to Reed on the loss of his mother.
Right.
Is he going to be, he'll be here maybe
he'll be
next
here
week?
Next week.
Next week.
He'll be here next week.
Very good. Well, good. I'll see him Monday then or Tuesday.
Okay.
Excellent. Excellent. Because it'll be the same hours.
Monday, we start at 11:45.
Perfect.
Lunch for a half hour and then we get into classwork.
Excellent. Yeah. All right. So I get to see. Okay. I haven't seen him in ages, and I'll get him on as well. We'll do it. We'll do the same thing. The situation down here, Herb, from a seasonal standpoint, in terms of purses, and let me shift into that a little bit because, of course, you're involved with the negotiations, the horsemen, working with management. The year round program has got some obstacles.
Right. There was a lot of discussion of perhaps closing down in the summer, shutting down for 2 or 3 months, and we sort of loaded the championship meet purses, and just for giving it a shot. We're hoping that the handle is sufficient enough to carry us through the summer. We pledged to open year round. We're not going to close this summer, but there was some talk about it, and horsemen were upset. But things are working out. I think things are going to be fine. Our ex president of our association, Steve Scrinci, is now the president of First Racing.
Right,
and he knows both ends of the game, And I told Belinda on Friday, I had a little chat with her, and I told her this is probably one of the best tires she ever made because he knows his stuff, and he'll do well for us. He'll do very well for us. So I'm confident that, we'll go forward and do fine.
Well, and there were some hints about the actually the move away from hosting the Clammy Crown,
right,
was an austerity move to basically
we lost money every year on the
exactly.
On the
so that was that and actually that ended up working out
good.
Fine for HBPA,
right,
and for the event itself,
right.
But that was done because that money better spent in management's mind in the overnight program.
Correct. And we're in discussion with the breeders now. We have this tri-party agreement that we're working out with them. And there was a meeting yesterday, I think, about it. And everything will get done. We're very optimistic about the future here.
What?
Now with our three courses, we can shut down the grass course and give it a break and everybody run on Tapeta, which is the reason they put it in. And it's working out great. The handle is up. And we handled Saturday. We had a
42.
Handled a lot of money Saturday,
Well, yeah. The landscape here changed a lot. Not in the time that, even in the time since you've come
down. I remember the old Gulfstream. I had a box at the old Gulfstream. We loved it.
Yeah.
You know.
It's different. I whenever this comes up, I only had ever come here for the 99 Breeders' Cup.
I was here for that also.
So I really did not have that glowing familiarity and love for the old building. I mean, certainly impressive, and the backyard. Losing the backyard seems like it was something that was kind of snatched from under.
Yeah, the walking ring was beautiful. It was that raised walking ring. You sat in beach chairs around it. It was
that it was part.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean,
nice.
When you're in Florida over the winter, that's what you're looking for. Yeah,
that's what people come here for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the one. But otherwise, there's a lot of things about Ronex Vision himself, and you mentioned the dormitories that was all him, and his wanting to upgrade the the life, the quality of life for the backstretch, but the idea of the entertainment and it. The mall, which is which has had mixed success, but the idea was to reshape what and New York is dealing with this right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, taking a grandstand that holds 70,000 and that just isn't necessary anymore. Mm-hmm. That can be cut.
I mean, the concept of the big day, like Belinda does it, the Preakness, where they put up. Temporary.
Right.
You see what's going on here? They're dismantling the whole track from Saturday. Everything is being taken away. Everything, I remember we spoke yesterday.
Yeah.
Everything, there's nothing that can't be rented,
It's true.
She rented, you saw the trees leaving and whatever.
The trees were leaving. Too funny.
Yeah.
Too funny.
I used to go to Aqueduct years ago by the Aqueduct Special. My friend Paul and I, who I still go to the races with today, we grew up together, used to take we couldn't even, I don't think we're old enough to bet, but we went to Aqueduct on the subway.
Sure.
Yeah. Brought back memories,
Did you grow up on Long Island?
No, I grew up in Brooklyn.
Where in Brooklyn?
I grew up on, we called it East Flatbush. It was Winthrop and East 96th Street. And I went to Wingate High School.
Okay.
And then I went to Long Island University. But it was in Brooklyn, the Brooklyn campus, which was the old Paramount Theater on Flatbush Avenue.
Sure. Juniors and...
right across from
A&S.
Exactly.
Yeah, I almost went to work at A&S. I almost went in that flagship building.
Exactly.
Yeah? Yeah. 82.
Yeah. Then I was a teacher for 10 years in the New York City school system.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I went into the insurance business. Yeah.
Huh.
So,
a different kind of annuity, as opposed to a teacher's
exactly.
The New York State teacher's pension.
Exactly.
Well, you started during the heyday of Albert Shanker, and
yeah, I remember
We used to call us Shankers. What they call us? Slackers. Shankers
Slackers.
Thank you. Know that's when the union was powerful, and we got some unbelievable things.
It's the greatest teachers union in the country.
Mayor Lindsay and all that stuff, you know.
Absolutely.
It was a pretty cool time. Crazy time. I was on strike. I didn't teach a day in my life. I was on strike.
Right when you first got out of school and started to ready to teach.
Went on strike.
I remember that. That strike. Yeah. That was famous. I mean, my wife's a teacher.
So was mine. She was. Yeah. She was a teacher. Yeah. So, a lot of water under the bridge.
I love it. Herb Oster is joining us. You know, it's funny. There's Fred Waring. When you tell me that, you know, you had horses in New York, there could have been occasions where Mr. Waring, the blender people, the blending, right? He had horses with Del Carroll and others, and Oster.
Unfortunately, no relation.
To the blender people.
I don't know what my name was before my parents came from Russia. Could be. I don't know.
You first generation?
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah. So it's a fun world down here. I looked around Saturday and said, give me my track back. I mean, look at all these people.
Wow. There is something to be said for the more sedate crowd. The atmosphere was great.
It was great, and
the execution of it, you know, we were upstairs.
It was amazing. The logistics to put a day like that together is amazing.
Yeah.
Think about it. I mean, you got Stacey Nix doing everything, and Sherry Holmes, and what they did is amazing. You know, all the reservations and comps.
There's a lot goes into it.
Yeah, it was a tremendous day.
And then we got, we talked to Bruce Lunsford earlier today, and, Art Collectors win. From a betting standpoint, there were plenty of opportunities on Saturday. You much of a player?
I like to dabble a little bit.
There you go.
Yeah. Didn't have Art Collector in the list.
No, it was very tough to honestly. He's one of the first horses I said can't win.
Al Gold is a friend. Through a friend, I know Al Gold, and I sat with him Saturday, and disappointing, you know.
There's an interesting, and I haven't discussed this maybe with Sid tomorrow. The fact that they sent him to the farm for the display show people to come. I don't know if that
took the edge off him.
Then you bring him back to the racetrack. Because it was obvious. I mean, he looked fabulous. I mean, physically.
I know. I saw him schooling the other day. He was scary good.
Yeah, but Giroux said he just was empty. He just didn't have the same. Didn't have the same kick. Didn't have the same horse. So
who knows?
Well,
that's why they run the races. They don't just give you the money.
Exactly. Well, and from a handicapping standpoint, we were all. The Safi Joseph horses, you were looking so, between Skippy and
White of Barrio.
White of Barrio was working so well.
Wow.
And they didn't lift a
hoof. 4 for 4 at Gulfstream.
Yeah, there was all.
Working bullets.
Well, I played simplification. I went back to him. It looked like he was coming into it, on his A game. I saw Antonio Sano yesterday. I didn't want to put him on and have him have to.
He's a good guy, Antonio.
Yes, he is, and he's got some nice horses in on Saturday. So we got another big day Saturday.
Yeah, we'll be here.
Herb Oster, a real pleasure, and congratulations for what you're doing with this crowd, the Groom Elite program, groomelite.com. If you've never visited Doc McClellan's website, he's put just. The people that are doing what you're doing and what Reed and his staff do, it's really unseen and underappreciated. We try to help. There's so many things that we need to do and be conscious of between the jock needs a PDJF. Then there's the whole aftercare community.
Mm-hmm.
But this is under under-publicized in terms of, you know, Shannon Kelly and Safety Net.
I wanted to bring her up, too. Last week we had backstretch appreciation lunches at Palm Meadows and here that the Safety Net funded.
Nice.
Through Shannon. She's a great, great gal.
Tremendous, tremendous gal. Work. We talked to her. We had a featured her last year during some Jockey Club, some of the, you know, some of the lesser known entities. But Groom Elite, the Florida THA, and Gulfstream sponsoring
it's this lunchtime.
Team. There you go. They're going to enjoy lunch. Herb, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Steve. Really, great meeting you.
A pleasure.
Listen to your show all the time.
Thank you. Herb Oster, everybody, wrapping up a full Tuesday. Back tomorrow, of course, and Sid and Dick Powell and Seth and more. Troy Levy and Chuck Simon are going to join us to talk about the Game of Silks concept that is pulling out of the station. Thanks to Shug today. Shug McGahee with the great hour one. And Phil D'Amato joined us. Bruce Lunsford, Andy Serling, and Herb just now. Good luck if you're playing today. Quiet day, just four venues operating. We will kind of kick into second gear tomorrow. Tampa and Gulfstream and much, much more. Thanks, everybody. Good luck. Talk to you tomorrow.
Oh, there goes a Buick 49.
The latest racing news. It's At The Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA.